You're listening to the podcast version of Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I'm Shayla Shapiro. Write the Book airs every Monday at 2 on the Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMMLP, Burlington, Vermont. The show features interviews with authors, poets, illustrators, agents, and editors. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear about three programs that are making the Burlington area writing community much richer. When I first lived in Burlington, I looked for a writing group to participate in or a class to take, but other than large programs sponsored by colleges, I could find nothing. Now local writers have many opportunities to make friends who write, exchange work, learn from each other, and have a great time. Three of these opportunities, the Burlington Writers Workshop, the Renegade Writers Collective, and the Writers Barn, will be highlighted on the show today. My first guest, Peter Biello, runs the Burlington Writers Workshop, a free writing workshop for all Vermonters that meets weekly in downtown Burlington. As their website puts it, all you need to participate is a desire to improve your craft. Peter Biello's voice may be recognizable to you because Peter is a Vermont Public Radio producer and announcer. He began his public radio career in 2007 at WHQR-FM in Wilmington, North Carolina. He served as Morning Edition host and reporter, covering county government and the Camp Lejeune Marine Corps base. His work has won several Associated Press awards and has appeared on NPR's All Things Considered, Weekend Edition, and PRI's This American Life. Peter holds a BFA in creative writing from UMaine Farmington and an MFA in fiction from UNC Wilmington. His work has appeared in online publications, and as you'll hear, he is the editor of the Best of the Burlington Writers Workshop series. I began our interview by asking Peter to talk about his own writing background.
Well, I've always been a writer, or at least I've always wanted to be a writer, except for when I was nine and I wanted to play shortstop for the Yankees. I went right from shortstop for the Yankees to being a writer. Of course, I wanted to write like Dave Barry kind of columns in the newspaper. That's the first thing that I saw. And of course, I grew up around books. My father was a huge book collector. He'd been a member of the Book of the Month Club since like the 60s.
I remember that.
Yeah, so he just, you know, all these history books and all these John le Carré novels just filled the house, every room, dining room, living room.
Now, where was this?
This was in Fall River, Massachusetts, where I grew up. And I don't know, I gravitated towards reading and then I think just by extension, writing, journaling. And I'd written stories throughout high school and that was when I discovered I could study creative writing in college, and then I didn't want to study anything else. So that brought me to UMaine Farmington, where I got my BFA, and then on to my MFA at UNC Wilmington, where I got the MFA in fiction.
Okay. Was that a full-time MFA program?
That was a full-time residency MFA. In fact, it was a three-year program.
Oh, wow.
I did 3 years of lit classes as an undergrad, and then I did another 3 years as a master's student at UNC Wilmington. And both times, it was extremely helpful to get that kind of structured feedback. So, I had 6 years of workshop time under my belt before I even got to Vermont, so
yeah,
it's kind of nice.
Okay, great. Now, do you write any poetry?
You know, it's funny that you ask that because I wrote one yesterday.
Oh, wow.
And I have no idea if it's any good.
Is that the first poem you've written in years and years, or do you every once in a while write a poem?
No, it's like the second one this year and probably the second one of my life.
Okay.
Really. You know, in high school, I never wrote the bad high school poetry because I just didn't like poetry. Uh-huh. So I'd write the bad high school stories, you know?
Yeah. Isn't that sad, though, that in high school, that's when you study poetry and no one likes it in high school? And it's like, unless you find a way back to it.
Yeah, well, I guess I should say I did like it,
yeah,
but I didn't like writing it.
Okay.
I was introduced to people like Philip Larkin, you know, people who were writing in less lofty language, still beautiful language, but accessible, more accessible language. Billy Collins, I was, my high school AP English class, you know, my teacher was wild about Billy Collins. So, I mean, he's been called the Stephen King of poetry, which is, you know, they mean it as a pejorative, but I think it's a wonderful thing to be able to access the emotions that poetry can give you. And that's what I was exposed to in high school. So I enjoyed it, but I don't think I thought that way. I thought in terms of plot and narrative and character development over many, many pages.
Mm-hmm.
And poetry seemed to, you know, just be too short for me in a way.
Okay. All right. Great. So you run or administer the Burlington Writers Workshop. So how did you get involved and how did the group get started?
The group got started in 2009 when Ryan O'Connor, he was the founder of Nth Word magazine, he wanted to develop a writer's group in town. So he started it on meetup.com, and at the time it was called Burlington Writers Group. And he had posted an ad on Craigslist linking to the meetup.com website. And that's how I found it. I was maybe two months. I was here for 2 months in Vermont when I found it and ended up going to the first meeting, which was held in the Vermont house where he had an apartment. And so I went to the meeting and there were about, I don't know, six or seven of us. And we talked about what we like to write. We did a writing prompt. We talked about some music and made plans for another meeting and called it good. And we just kept meeting and I developed a friendship with Ryan, who has since left the area. When he left the area to work with Double Edge Theater out in Western Massachusetts, he asked me if I'd like to take it over, and I didn't want to. Well, I didn't want to because I knew it would be a lot of work.
Yeah.
And I was kind of, you know, I'm starting work at Vermont Public Radio and I wanted to focus on that. But I also really wanted a place where I could bring my work to other people and say, hey, can you look at this? So I said, okay, I'll do it. And I paid for 6 months worth of the meetup.com presence, which if you do it that way, it brings it down to 12 bucks a month. Mm-hmm. Other than that, it's like 20 bucks a month. But I said, all right, I'll commit for 6 months and see how it goes. And people kept showing up. I mean, it died down a little bit that first summer because it wasn't a very big group and people left town.
And summers are like that.
And summers can be like that. But you know, that's why it surprised me every summer since that, wow, people are still here.
Yeah.
You know, and we had a meeting last night with 20 people.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't believe all these people are really interested, but they are. So, but anyway, to backtrack, yeah, Ryan handed it over to me. And so I started as a participant and then ended up being the organizer, trying to find places for us to meet and times and figuring out what works best for people. And eventually developing it into less of a group, quote unquote, and more of a workshop.
Okay. So. Now, are any of those original people that used to meet in the Vermont house still in the group other than you?
No. None of those people are still there.
Okay.
In fact, I think because of the way Meetup works, they kind of automatically boot people whose emails are returned unanswered.
Oh, sure.
So Ryan was booted out.
Oh,
automatically.
No way.
And I got the automatic email and I said, oh, that's not good. I should get him to rejoin so he can get my email messages and know when the next meeting is in case he ever wants to come back in town and attend a meeting.
Yeah.
See where it's gone.
Yeah, exactly. But it's gone very far.
Yeah.
You've sort of already done this, but my next question was, how would you describe the group to someone who doesn't know about it? But then also sort of as an ancillary, what do writers get out of participating?
Okay. Well, the answer to your first question would be it's like getting an MFA that you don't have to pay for, but that offers you no formal credential.
Okay.
I mean, maybe that's just what you're paying for when you're paying for an MFA. I think one of the most valuable things about the workshop is that it's free, that people can participate when they want at no cost. It's not going to put you in debt. And there's no hat that goes around that even asks for optional donations every meeting. You show up, you enjoy yourself, you read, you talk to some people, you maybe have a beer, and then you leave. And it's fun.
Yeah. What do writers get out of participating in a writing group? What do you think people get out of it?
On a very basic level, they get the feedback. Assuming a meeting is full, each writer will get 14 copies of their either poem or essay or story handed back to them with various line edits and a written response at the end. That's the very practical thing that we offer. It's the core mission. If we provide nothing else, we provide that.
Right.
But I think there are some ancillary things that people also care a great deal about. And maybe we should say that you have been to these meetings too. So
yes.
You could probably answer this question for yourself, which is, you know, people like the social aspect.
Yep.
People enjoy being with other people who think a lot, and writers tend to do that.
Yeah.
Perhaps too much at times. But it's good to think a lot sometimes.
Yeah, so, no, I think that's a really good point, that writers think too much sometimes. And so we can talk each other down off of a particularly self-conscious moment or encourage each other in trying to get published or trying to make something perfect.
Yeah, and I've heard the quote that writers writers live at the intersection of, you know, self-loathing and narcissism.
Yeah.
And so if we're all together feeling that intersection of self-love and self-hatred and narcissism, I mean, we can talk to each other about it, and sort of that empathy, I think, makes a writer's world sort of a really better place to live in my opinion. And it's nice to see so many people engaged in that same dark, lonely struggle, you mm-hmm. know, that you know, we're going to go home and we're going to work on this and it's going to be lonely and no one else is going to understand what I'm doing until it's out in the world. And until then, it's going to be a tough process, but at least you have other people who are going through the same thing.
Right, right. And I also think, if I can just add from my own perspective, I think a deadline is really helpful. And having the weekly meetings or even sometimes more than weekly meetings is this awesome built-in deadline into the writing world.
Yeah. And for the Burlington Writers Workshop in particular, it's not a requirement that you attend every week. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of these just flowing rivers that you can dip into whenever right. you feel like it. Of course, it's better if you don't just dip in when you want feedback. It's great to go and give other people feedback too, and there's never been a problem with that. But it's there if you need it, mm-hmm. and I think that's pretty valuable. At least it's valuable to me. I just workshopped a piece earlier this month, and it was extremely helpful to me. Yeah. I was so glad to get this feedback. In fact, I couldn't stay for the jam session that they were having after the meeting, so I had to leave. But you know, walking back to my car up Church Street, I had to stop and sit on one of those rocks, uh-huh. those enormous rocks, and like I couldn't wait till I got home. Like I had to know what people wrote on my pages.
Oh, that's great.
I was so curious, you know, because it always surprises me.
Yeah.
You know, I've been in workshops for years now. I mean, 4 years with this workshop, and then 6 years in my academic career, and I'm still surprised. Some stuff's predictable. And some stuff is like, oh, wow, I did not think that before. And I think somewhere in between all the comments is the line of best fit.
Yeah.
Where that's where I need to be. And I'm always looking for that when I read my comments.
Right.
So I don't know.
Having been in so many different types of workshops, mm-hmm. you know, from academic to just social, in this case, sort of community social, you know, the old style writing workshop, I would call it, I guess, the Iowa model, is renowned for being fairly harsh. Mm-hmm. So what are the rules within the Burlington Writers Workshop about how people speak to each other?
We're not the notoriously harsh group, harsh for the sake of being harsh, mm-hmm. I don't think. Maybe that's a badge of honor that some workshops like to wear, but not mine. The rules are, you know, let's start with talking about what works well. Mm-hmm. Let's play to a writer's strength, because I believe, and this is borne out in experience, my own experience in watching other writers develop, that if you are writing in a way that works for you, then you're going to write better stuff. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that you should avoid the stuff that's not working, but you should always play to your strength and write the stuff that comes easy to you, and work on the stuff that's not so easy. But don't forget what's good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's important to remember. And I'll say that because I was thinking of the other day about the good things people were saying about my story. And it's not a perfect story. There are flaws in it, big ones, you know, and it's a daunting task to be like, how am I going to fix this story? How am I going to make this character come alive? I thought I had, but I didn't. You know, how am I going to do that? And the thought of taking those 20 pages and mashing them about until this character comes alive is a terrifying thought. Mm-hmm. But I also received a lot of encouragement. Like, when you're done revising, you need to send this out, is mm-hmm. the kind of thing people would say to me.
Right.
And they said it with enough enthusiasm that made me think, okay, it's worth revising. I shouldn't just scrap it and move mm-hmm. on. This is something I need to keep at. And that kind of comment, the comment that it's working well, just a couple things need to be fixed, big things, but they need to be fixed, motivates me to want to do that, motivates me to want to revise. And I think when we provide those helpful comments as well, we're motivating each other to get the work done. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the rules. I hate the word should. When someone says you should change or you need to, no one needs to do anything.
Right.
It's your piece. The author decides what needs to be done.
So you mean within the conversation, you'd prefer people not use that kind of language?
Yeah. I mean, you may say that's semantics and it doesn't matter how you say it, but it does. To me, it does. Because if you're harsh and you say you need to, and it's suddenly we're writing by committee, then it's no longer a piece of art, right? It's just something that we've all decided on is the right thing to do. That doesn't quite work for me, and it doesn't work for the writers in the group. At least it doesn't seem like it does, because mm-hmm. no one wants to be told what to do. Now, granted, sometimes you may worry, like, well, if I don't tell this person what to do, how will they know? And they'll know.
Right.
They'll,
but you can always say, if it were me.
Yeah. You could say it that way. But the way I like to structure the responses is I would say something like, when this character did X, I felt why.
Oh, okay.
You know, so if say a character gives $5 to a street performer and that made me feel like I like the character, like it's a good thing to say, to point out, like I really felt like this character was doing a very nice thing and it made me feel good for him, made me like him when he gave that $5 to the street musician. But if another person said, I thought that was a very condescending gesture for that character to do that, that the author has to figure out, did I write this to make this character seem condescending, or did I write it because I wanted to make this character seem like a nice guy?
Mm-hmm.
And it's up for the writer to decide. If I had said during that same scenario, well, if it were me, I would say this character, when he gives the $5, he should say, you're doing an awfully good job, you know, or some such thing. If I created a suggestion like that,
right,
then I'm doing way more work for the writer than I should be.
Right.
The writer needs to say, do I want him to be condescending? Do I want him to be a nice guy? Do I need to strive for a mixture of both, or do I want neither?
Or how do I convey what I want?
Right.
In the best way for the work.
Because ultimately I feel like it's about communication, and are you communicating the idea that you want to communicate?
Yeah.
And if I have an idea, I put it on paper and you don't get that idea. If you tell me what you got,
right,
I'll have an idea of how far away from the target I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll try again to hit that exact target. So if I bring it back to the workshop and I hand it to you again and you say, now I get what you were trying to say, then I say, all right, I've succeeded.
Okay.
You may not like it, but if you've understood what the author's trying to convey, then that author feels that he or she has succeeded. Now, you can debate whether or not the author should have wanted to do that, but that's a completely different issue.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about whether I like it or not. It's not ready to be judged. It's a draft.
Okay. I know that there are some special events coming up for the Burlington Writers Workshop. And also, in this last year, you had the publication of an anthology that
right.
was pretty exciting. So I wonder if you can talk about some of these things that happen outside of the actual meetings.
Sure. Well, right now, we've closed submissions for Winter Tales,
mm-hmm.
which is put on by Vermont Stage Company. They were looking for winter-themed pieces, holiday-themed pieces, to be read aloud or performed by an actor for four nights during the Winter Tales at the Flynn this coming December. So that was just closed. I've got to meet with the director to sort of sort through the submissions and see which ones might make it. So that's one of the partnerships we've got going on. The other one we have is with the Flynn Center for the Performing Arts.
Mm-hmm.
John Kalacki at the Flynn invited Burlington Writers Workshop writers to blog about events at the Flynn. They'll sort of create a conversation about that artist or the themes that artist hits upon
mm-hmm.
before the show and then after the show as a way to generate interest in conversation and what's going on at the Flynn, and a chance for us to write about something we may not usually write about,
mm-hmm.
you know, or a response to another artist's work. I mean, we do that every week at the workshops, but a performance and publish this piece of writing in a public setting. So that's interesting. And of course, the writers are happy to get free tickets to shows, which John Kalacki is happy to provide.
That's great.
So that's pretty exciting. And I should note that I can't participate myself because of VPR. If I'm reading underwriting announcements for the Flynn Center and VPR, I certainly can't do this kind of thing for the Flynn, but I'm happy to facilitate it for other people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, the book, which, Shayla, you know about because you have a story in the first book, Ophelia Invisible. Wonderful story.
Thank you.
It's a collection of stories, essays, and poems by members of the Burlington Writers Workshop. It came out of a desire from some of the group members to showcase their work in a way that was meaningful and interesting. And so we developed a Kickstarter campaign. We raised $3,200, and I've put some money in afterwards. So that I think the total investment in the book was $3,600.
Mm-hmm.
And we printed this book, and it contains 17 pieces by 13 writers. And it's a wonderful representation of what we've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a team effort, and I'm looking forward to the next one. The sales of this one will go 100% towards production of the next one. And it'll be the same thing next time around. It'll be stories, essays, poems. I'm going to try to add more photography on the inside, depending on what people have.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I know I can include black and white photography, I'll be able to do that with a little more ease.
Are you going to take submissions from artists for that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We have some artists within the group. I mean, it's got to be within the group. Like, if you want to submit to this book, you have to be a member of the Burlington Writers Workshop.
Okay.
As much as I love, you know, writers like David Budbill and Chris Bojalian and Howard Frank Mosier, they have their own circles to publish in. I mean, if they wanted to attend the Burlington Writers Workshop and participate, then they would sort of be eligible, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, they're publishing elsewhere. These pages are reserved for people who want to be a part of this community and give to each other, which is so important.
Yeah.
You know, you got to give to each other before you can expect something back. So,
okay. All right.
So that's what that's about. And so we're accepting submissions from group members until December 1st for the next book.
Okay.
So
now, if anybody is not yet a member of the group and wants to become a member of the group, what's the easiest way to do that?
The easiest way to become a member of the Burlington Writers Workshop is to go to meetup.com and you'll have to create an account.
Pretty simple registration process.
Pretty simple. I mean, you don't even have to like use your real name if you don't want to. Some people just use their initials.
And there's no fee?
No fee.
Okay.
No fee. It's free to join. To start a group on Meetup, it costs money, but to join one, it's free.
Okay.
So if you wanted to join, you can just click join this group, and then you'll be among the, I think it's 306 now, people who are on the meeting mailing list. And many of those people cycle in and out.
Mm-hmm.
They don't come to every meeting. But yeah, if you wanted to join, meetup.com is the place to do it.
Okay. So they do a search within meetup.com for the Burlington Writers Workshop.
Mm-hmm. Generally, in meetup.com, you can search by zip code.
Okay.
So that you can see what kind of meetups are around. There are several of them. You know, there's the Burlington Young Professionals. There's the Deep and Meaningful Conversation Group.
Right. Knitting groups, quilting groups.
Right. There's a women's book club, I think, as well. Lots of good stuff out there.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned 306 people are presently registered. Obviously, 306 people don't come to the meetings.
Right.
So how do you control the size of the meetings? And where do they meet?
Meetup.com allows me to set an attendance cap and create an automatic waiting list. So I usually set it at 15. If I have a hunch that I'll be able to have a meeting outside and we'll have more space, like at City Hall Park. We had a meeting in July at City Hall Park. Then I'll be able to increase the cap and sort of divide the group so that we have two little circles going and two discussion groups. But for the most part, it's 15 people with an automatic waiting list. So if you wanted to join, but the meeting looked full, join the waiting list because sometimes spots open up.
Okay.
And we usually meet in the basement of Half Lounge. And when you say the word basement, you think dank and dark and scary, and it's really not. It's just a tiny little seminar room. They even let us keep our own little lamp down there that they drag out on Wednesday nights for our regular meetings. And it gives a nice ambiance, I think.
Yeah. That's great. Well, Peter Biello, this was a pleasure, and I think it's great what you're doing with the Burlington Writers Workshop. I have one last question for you, and that is, if Ryan were to look at you today and ask you to take this on all over again, what would you say?
Oh, my God, that's a great question. I would say yes.
Yeah.
I would say yes, and I would do right away all the things that I have said over the past year, which is, why did I wait so long to do this?
Yeah.
Among those things are, you know, why didn't I put flyers up around town, you know, to get more interest? Why didn't I talk to more people about it and say, oh, this is just a small thing I do on the side instead of something that takes at least 2 hours of my day every day?
Yeah.
I think that's what I would do. And I would also start giving the meetup names crazy names right away.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That's another thing that we do, that the meeting titles, instead of naming them Another Meeting and This Week's Workshop or something like that, we steal out of context lines from stories and poems that appear. So the last meeting we had was Insatiable as a Succubus. And one of my favorite meeting titles coming up is A Steaming Pile of Bullpucky. So if you'd like to come to A Steaming Pile of Bullpucky, you may have to join the waiting list because I think that one's full.
Okay. Well, Peter Biello, thank you so much for talking to me about the Burlington Writers Workshop.
Glad to do it.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Peter Biello. More information about the Burlington Writers Workshop can be found online by searching the groups in Burlington that coordinate meetings through meetup.com or by going to their website, burlingtonwritersworkshop.com.
My next interview for today's show is with Angela Palm and Jessica Hendry Nelson, co-founders of the Renegade Writers Collective, a home for writers of all ages, working in all genres, in which to create and share their work, collaborate in writing workshops and retreats, hold events and readings, engage in discussion groups, and write independently in a quiet, inspiring, and nurturing space. Raised in the rural Midwest, Angela Palm has worked as a freelance editor, writer, and ghostwriter, and studied English literature at St. Joseph's College. Her work has appeared in, or is forthcoming in, Midwestern Gothic, Ardor Literary Magazine, Little Fiction, Sundog Lit, Prick of the Spindle, Best of the Burlington Writers Workshop, and elsewhere. She's an associate nonfiction editor at The Fiddleback, a literary journal. She's working on her first novel, as well as a book project featuring work by Vermont writers called Please Do Not Remove. Each piece in the anthology, which is due out in spring 2014, is inspired by used library checkout cards. Jessica Hendry Nelson is the author of the memoir in essays, If Only You People Could Follow Directions, forthcoming by Counterpoint Press. Her work has been published in numerous journals and magazines, including the Three Penny Review and Carolina Quarterly, and has been featured as notable essay in Best American Essays 2012 and nominated for a Pushcart Prize. She lives in Colchester, Vermont, teaches writing at Johnson State College, and is the senior nonfiction editor of The Fiddleback. When I spoke to Angela and Jessica about the Renegade Writers Collective, I began by asking what each of them writes. Jessica is the first to speak.
I write primarily nonfiction, essays, memoir, creative nonfiction, but I also write fiction and occasionally poetry.
Okay.
I mainly write fiction and also some personal essays and no poetry, as yet.
Okay. And Jessica, you have a book coming out.
Right.
So what's that title?
It's called If Only You People Could Follow Directions, and it's coming out from Counterpoint Press in January 2014.
Okay, that's exciting. That's cool. All right, so how did the Renegade Writing Collective get started, and why is it called Renegade?
So we basically have been meeting in a small writing group for about a year, and have really, Jessica and I have been talking about how, you know, we wanted a reading series and we wanted to have a bigger community and just really kind of bridge the gaps between all of the different writing groups that we'd known about but that we hadn't really interacted with, not only in Burlington but around the state of Vermont. And so we started putting a few things together. The reading series is one of them, and then things just kind of fell into place and it looked like it was the right time and the right place, and we went for it.
And I think we were meeting so many writers, a lot of writers both with MFAs and without MFAs, who wanted to take classes. You know, they wanted that, they wanted more community, they wanted more interaction with the literary community in Burlington, and wanted to continue their study, and either couldn't, you know, afford to take 2 years and go get an MFA, or already had one and still wanted to be taking classes, and there really wasn't a venue for that in Vermont where people could take classes in all genres, all styles, at all levels with really qualified instructors. So we felt like that was something we could provide.
Mm-hmm. And because both of us have an editing background, we thought, well, why not offer editing services to really make this like a well-rounded writing center? So not only are you getting the classes, the community, and the social aspect, but you're getting like the full scope of bringing your work to publication if you want that.
So editing services, you're talking about manuscript?
Mm-hmm. Copy editing and manuscript development.
Right, right. I mean, really anything that a writer would need from the point of development through publication, you know, getting the work out. You know, we even counsel writers on where to send their work, what the best place would be and how to go about that.
So as far as, you mean literary journals or literary agents or publishers, all of the above?
Both. All of the above.
Wow.
Yeah.
So helping them seek out the best fits for their particular, which is a lengthy process, as you're probably aware, digging through the books of agents and publishers and putting that list together. So we offer to do that for them.
Now you guys are the principal partners in the business.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is involved, or how many people are involved at this point? Like, you have your teachers lined up? Do you have your consultants lined up?
We do. We have all of our instructors lined up. through the fall, and we're still adding instructors after January 1st. So we have about 14 classes. We're offering 12 other instructors, including Sydney Lee, Vermont's Poet Laureate, Tony Whedon, Christina Rosalie, Angie and I will both be teaching.
Rachel Carter,
who's a young adult novelist, who has a trilogy out with HarperCollins, an array of really talented writers and teachers.
So how did you get those people to participate?
Well, I mean, it's been a lot of networking and a lot of just kind of having conversations with writers and editors around the state. The New England Review really helped us. Oh, the yeah. editors there helped us get the word out, and they know, you know, all kinds of people that kind of started sending us emails and saying they're interested, and we are doing some advertising for teaching positions as well.
I think what's neat, too, is that, you know, we just asked. You know, we asked yeah. if people would be interested, and the response we got was really overwhelming. And I think what's exciting for teachers is it's an opportunity to teach what you know best, how you want to teach it. You can, you know, all of the syllabi are completely self-designed. And so, you know, as I know, you know, teaching at a university, it's great, but you often are very limited in what you can teach and how you can teach it.
Right.
And this gives people an opportunity to do, you know, and try very exciting things with their curriculum, and, mm. and people are excited about that opportunity.
And that sort of lends itself to the idea of the Renegade, which is that we can offer these sort of offbeat classes a little bit, but also some traditional and classic studies in writing, and kind of keep that all, you know, Renegade.
Yeah.
Which is sort of fun.
Okay.
Like, we're going to be doing in a really fun Valentine's Day week class that will be
erotica writing.
It's a really fun erotica writing class. So, you know, things like
that. Is there any other kind of erotica class?
Yeah, is there any other
Exactly.
Okay. What's the tie-in with Arts Riot?
So, we came to Arts Riot when we were looking for a venue for this reading series, and I saw that they were opening a gallery on Pine Street, and since we've been working in the South End, we, you know, sort of felt like this was our community, and I thought, well, let's see if they would like to host our reading there and see if that works. And we started talking with Felix and PJ about what we're doing, and they were super excited to find a literary component of the arts that would fit in with what they're doing with Arts Riot as a whole. And we just started bouncing around ideas, and now we have almost a monthly event happening there that's, you know, different from the last, and it should be really exciting. And what's really neat too for us is that we're trying to not only just do literary events, but provide a lot of crossover in other artistic disciplines, and just kind of bring the whole arts community together mm-hmm. in a way that maybe they haven't been brought together before.
Because you're talking about like the gallery tie-in and
yeah, so there'll be visual art. We'll bring bands in from time to time, also other kinds of performing arts, the culinary arts, and really kind of whatever.
Wow. Culinary
whatever
arts,
people would want
right.
to do, we're interested in doing.
Okay.
You know, we, with our events and our readings in particular, we're trying to make them as dynamic as possible, you know, so that anytime you come to one of our readings or events, you're going to get something that's not expected.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that'll be a great way to pull in people in different areas who are interested in different things, and to see the exciting ways that these can work together.
Yeah. So how much time is this taking? Is this like
quite a bit of time at this point?
Every waking minute.
We're sort of saying that, you know, we had this idea and we decided, okay, this is a great time, and then we picked up the ball of owning and starting a business and didn't really realize, like, you cannot put that ball down once you pick it up. So now, you know, it's day and night, and
but it's fun.
It is. It's weird. We're loving
it. It's fun. It's collaborative. It's exciting. It's, you know, we're getting to meet and talk to all these wonderful writers and teachers, and so it doesn't feel like work yet. I hope it never does.
Yeah.
But yeah, time consuming. And I'll be teaching at Johnson State 3 classes in the fall in addition to this. So it's a lot.
Yeah.
But it's exciting.
Now, what's the space that you're going to house the collective in?
We will be in the Karma Bird House, which is at 47 Maple Street in Burlington. It's a beautiful kind of a collaborative workspace in that there are a lot of different small businesses that are located on the same floor and kind of access the same shared areas. So, but yeah, it's a really, really neat place to be for us, kind of the perfect fit.
So you have like conference rooms and classrooms and...
We'll have one main office where we'll hold our classes and where we'll also work during the day when classes aren't taking place. And then there are other conferences that you can use in the Karma Birdhouse as part of the amenities right. there.
Conference rooms, living room.
The art gallery.
Art gallery. Maglianero's coffee shop is downstairs.
Kitchen. And it's really a fantastic place.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. Let's see. What upcoming events or projects are on the horizon?
We have a lot of exciting things. So this Saturday, July 27th, which I suppose would be past, is our first inaugural reading, and we'll have a band as well. And then August 25th, we'll launch our new Tales from the Bear Cave, which is a storytelling event with Arts Riot, much like the Moth in New York, so people can... There will be a theme for every event, and people will sign up to tell a story. We'll have camping theme-related foods.
And prizes. I think there will be a prize.
And prizes
for the storyteller winner of the evening.
Oh, okay. So now, are these stories going to be impromptu and not reading off of a sheet? Or I mean, that's
yes,
how the moth works,
it'll
right?
It'll be oral tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
And then after that, we're doing an open house in our new office on September 12th, and it's going to be a sci-fi and dark fiction themed reading with a stage play performance. So it'll just be read aloud with different actors reading the parts, just kind of introduce the community to the space so they can come in and see it and see where these classes are going to be happening. And what else are we doing? We've got
a writing retreat planned for the weekend of September 27th to the 29th, which is filling rapidly. And that'll be in Lincoln, Vermont at Zeno Mountain Farm, which is beautiful. We'll have craft discussions, little mini workshops. We'll read our work around the campfire. We'll barbecue. It'll be wonderful. Mm-hmm. And then we have the book fest during the Burlington Book Fest. We'll have a table where we'll be all day with our information, registration materials, information about classes. People can come say hello. And that evening, Saturday, we'll have our literary pub crawl, which is really exciting. We'll go to 5 different stops in Burlington. At each stop, there will be a different reader. People will have time to get out, get a drink, sit down. We'll be at each stop for about 45 minutes. They'll listen to the reading, and then we'll get back on the bus and head to the next venue.
So you're going to have a designated bus.
It's the Arts Riot bus. They have a bus that's like graffitied, and it's all decked out with wood flooring, and it's very cool.
We'll be doing some fun writing prompts on the bus that participants will have an opportunity to share at our second to last stop. And we'll have some prizes for that. We'll do some raffles, and then we'll end up back at Arts Riot in their gallery, where Tony Whedon will be performing with his band, Po-Jazz, which is a hybrid between poetry and jazz, which will be fun.
Which is a great band. It's really, really fun to listen to them.
Cool.
Yeah, they sometimes draw people from the audience to participate.
Oh, really?
I think so. Yeah.
That's a surprise to us.
they did it the one thing that I've been to. They did. Okay. So is there a website or a brochure or anything that people can go to?
Yeah, both. We have a website. It's renegadewritersvt.com. Is the main source of information. Mm-hmm. We're also on Twitter, Renegade Writing. We're on Facebook. And we've got lots and lots of brochures with our classes and other offerings.
Okay, the website is probably the answer. But how can people get involved to either participate, like to offer their services if they're teachers, or also to attend?
Yeah, so the website has places to... register for classes and also solicit information about teaching or contact us with a proposal for a class or seminar. They can sign up to volunteer. They can sign up for our mailing list there.
We also have, there's a tab on our website called Opportunities, and people can go to that tab to find out how to either apply to teach or to be a reader at one of our reading events.
Okay.
Or, you know, if somebody is working in a different art discipline and would like to be involved in one of our events, they could do that there as well, and it would be through our email, www.renegadewritersvt@gmail.com.
Okay. Now, when people decide that they want manuscript consultation, for mm-hmm. example, do they have, like, a choice of the person that they work with, or how does that work?
We're sort of working collaboratively on some editing projects. If they do want one of us to edit, that would be fine, too. Okay. Or it's just, yeah.
It's happening.
It's an organic process. Yeah. People have been writing to us with their projects, and, you know, we sort of get in touch and talk about the project. We decide which of us would be the better fit for that particular project. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty organic. But if, you know, of course, if they have a preference, that's fine as well.
Yeah. Okay. And then is that, like, by the hour or by the page? How do you charge for that?
It is by the hour, and then there's sort of a range of pages that could be expected to be completed during that time, just depending on the quality of the manuscript or the state of completion. Mm-hmm. And then the manuscript review is just a flat fee for reading your entire book and giving you feedback. And then there's also a flat fee for a short work, mm-hmm. Which we call the short work workout. So we'll just, you know, read your short story of up to like 6,000 words and give you, you know, really great feedback and help you bring it towards your goal.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys actively looking for freelancers who do this kind of work on their own that might want to be involved in a more collective situation?
We're not yet, as far as, you know, handing other editors work,
right.
But there's definitely the possibility of that in the future, depending mm-hmm. on our growth. We would love to be able to do that in the future. So
yeah. Okay. I did read in the 7 Days article that you've sort of based this a little bit on your appreciation of the work that Grub Street does in Boston. Mm-hmm. So have you participated? Like, have you gone to any Grub Street stuff, or how do you know about them?
I haven't yet. I think being so close to Boston, we sort of know about them, and I feel like a lot of writers just kind of know what Grub Street is.
Yeah.
There was a lot of talk of what Grub Street was doing at AWP this year since it was in Boston, and I think they had some of their own sections at AWP this year. And we have not taken a class there yet, but we would like to this summer, actually.
Yeah, I know they do some fantastic work, and I have a lot of friends who teach there, taught there, took classes there, and we really saw it as an inspiration for something that Burlington could really benefit from, you know, on a slightly smaller scale.
Right. Now, do you anticipate this ever becoming something where you would have literary agents involved or anything like that? Or?
Yes.
Absolutely. You know, we have lots of ideas about development. You know, literary agents and editors would definitely be a part of that model in mm-hmm. the future. Mm-hmm. And exactly how and, you know, when is to be determined. But it's something that we're looking to in mm-hmm. the future.
So is there anything else?
Pretty well.
We'll have a literary panel later in the fall in addition to our classes that we'll sit on. We both edit the Fiddleback, nonfiction for the Fiddleback, and we'll have editors from New England Review and Green Mountain Review and maybe a couple others where participants can come and ask all of those burning questions about yep. submitting to literary magazines.
What's the Fiddleback?
The Fiddleback is an online journal of literature and art that I've been editing for the past 3 years, and Angie's been editing for about 6 months now. We publish beautiful, beautiful work.
Mm. So what's the website for that?
Fiddleback.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's all my questions. Thank
Great.
You so much for
Thank
talking
you.
With me.
Thank you very much.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jessica Hendry Nelson and Angela Palm. More information about the Renegade Writers Collective can be found at renegadewritersvt.com. The third interview on today's show is with Lynn Stone and Daniel Lusk of the Writer's Barn in Shelburne, Vermont. Lynn Stone is the managing editor of Windridge Books of Vermont and coordinator of the Writer's Barn. She has carefully read a chapter a night for more than 50 years and has been writing and reading stories for Windridge since 2006. She graduated from Friends World College in England and has lived in the Burlington area with her family since 1988. An award-winning poet and well-known teacher, Daniel Lusk teaches poetry writing at UVM and also leads a workshop for teachers and chaperones at the Champlain Young Writers Conference each year.
Recent books include Lake Studies, Meditations on Lake Champlain, and a companion audiobook, The Inland Sea, and his poems are widely published in literary journals. When I spoke with Lynn and Daniel, I began by asking how the Writer's Barn got its start.
Well, it's a funny roundabout way, really. We started publishing books for Wind Ridge Books, and we got a lot of manuscripts from a lot of very creative people in our community. Mm-hmm. And we're a very small publishing house, so we could really only consider 4 or 6 a year. Mm-hmm. But our publisher is a very kind and benevolent woman, and these people bring you their manuscripts with their hearts on their sleeves and in their hands and would like you to publish. And she would like to be a good community member.
Right.
But we cannot publish everybody's bedside table manuscript sustainably. So we began to think, well, how can we be good community members? Some of the manuscripts were not publishable yet. They needed some craft and skill. Some were books that weren't our cup of tea, but they might be somebody else's. Mm-hmm. And so we thought, well, how can we say yes differently? What mm-hmm. can we do? And we came up with 2 things we could do. We would still want to choose our own 4 to 6 books a year from writers in our community whom we love their work and would like to bring them a broader readership and partner with them. And then 2, we thought we could teach craft and try to build a writer's community so that the work that is not yet publishable could grow mm-hmm. and that we could get to yes someday, if not with our own house, then with someone else's publishing house, that the people who've poured their hearts out in these papers have an opportunity without needing to necessarily go back to college to find a community of careful readers mm-hmm. and fellow writers to develop their craft. And then, part 2, we thought, well, also, we're not the gatekeepers anymore at publishing. Self-publishing has become a respectable, and the doors are open.
Right.
And we can help people make a book if they wish to assume the responsibility for marketing it and for getting it out to readers. We can help them make the book mm-hmm. and distribute it. So we started a second imprint called Red Barn Books for independent authors who wish to be entrepreneurial or who want to just share it with their family as a legacy.
Okay.
Or business-to-business book. So our second imprint are for people with vim and vigor who want to take on their own project.
Okay.
And so we have 3 ways to say yes. And no matter where somebody is in the writing world and continuum, we try to have a way to be helpful.
All right. Wonderful. Now, before we move too far on, those 4 to 6 books a year that you take through Windridge, mm-hmm. what do you take for submissions? What kinds of books are those?
We focus on the voices of Vermonters. We only publish Vermont writers. Mm-hmm. And we publish writers. It's been mostly nonfiction. That's not really a rule, but it's mostly poetry, VPR columnists, memoirs.
Okay. All right. Great. Now, Daniel Lusk is with us, and I wanted to ask you about the manuscript you have coming out. Is that coming out through Windridge?
It is.
Okay.
It is.
And when will that happen?
It's coming September 15th is the launch date.
Okay, wonderful. So what's the process been like for you I know you teach for the Writer's Barn as well. So
yes.
Which came first, the teaching or the involvement with Windridge?
Well, it was coincidentally at about the same time.
Okay.
But for me, I had been submitting this manuscript in national competitions for years, mm-hmm. and it found a home here after being a finalist in a number of those competitions. And I was publishing in magazines, the usual sort of things that poets do.
Right, the literary journals.
So I was very pleased. Yeah. But one thing I'd like to say is that one thing I found was that in many cases with university houses or whatever, you don't get a lot of feedback. Either your manuscript is good enough to publish or it's not. And in this case, I was very pleased to find an editor who cared about the book and wanted it to be the best possible book.
Mm-hmm. We're also publishing this September Angela Patton's book, which is a memoir of her Irish childhood. She is Daniel Lusk's wife,
okay,
a poet and a senior lecturer at the University of Vermont. And her book is called High Tea at a Low Table. Uh-huh. And it was a memoir, and we did we had probably way too much fun in the time we spent revising it. And I think it's an exquisite memoir, and I do say that I did read Edna O'Brien, another Irish writer, just put out her memoir, and I'm far more fond of Angela Patton's. So we're very lucky, and I enjoy the time. When we began our publishing books, we called it partnership books for two reasons. One was that we are looking for a partnership with the writers in many ways. One, in making the craft and the book good, and two, a partner in marketing the book and in choosing a nonprofit organization and a charity to donate a percentage of net profits.
Right.
So we do try to be a little bit of a different publisher.
Now, I do remember I interviewed Bill Mayers
about
a couple of books that he published through you, I believe.
Yeah.
And I also interviewed Dr. Stephen Metz.
Yeah.
So I did hear a little bit about the causes that their books supported ultimately. So is that the author's choice?
Mm-hmm.
It is the author's choice.
We will donate 10% of net profits to whatever organization the author chooses.
And it has to be a nonprofit or?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Nonprofit organization. So Daniel has chosen the Lake Champlain Maritime Museum.
Oh, wonderful.
And Angela, for her book High Tea, has chosen Shelburne Farms.
Okay. Now, do those two particular causes have to do with the subject matter of your two books as well?
Well, actually, the Maritime Museum published my previous book called Lake Studies, as well as an audiobook companion to that book. So I feel as if I'm indebted to them, but also to the work that they do about the lake, which many of us care a great deal about. So,
does your poetry subject matter have to do with the lake?
That last book was called Lake Studies, was the result of 2 years of research on Lake Champlain.
Okay. And the new material?
The poems are set in near the wilderness in Jonesville, actually, Vermont, where we lived for a dozen years, and I wrote those poems while we lived there.
Okay, all right, wonderful. So I wanted to ask about your teaching. First of all, I was going to ask Lynn, how do you find teachers to participate in the program? Are people asking to be a part of the program at this point, or are you still looking for teachers?
I would say it's still a bit of both.
Okay,
you know, a little bit of word of mouth helps. But we started with our neighbors. Elizabeth Blumley, who owns The Flying Pig, was one of our first teachers, and her books, My Father the Dog, etc., have children and adults thoroughly delighted. And she's a fabulous teacher. So she was one of our first. And then she introduced us to the Vermont College of Fine Arts, where we have found many alumni who are fabulous, and so we glean from that alumni catalog and make phone calls. And then my former colleague, Emily Copeland, teaches English at St. Michael's and has taught for that writing program for young adults at Champlain College every summer.
Okay.
Forgot the name.
Okay.
So she knew a circle of writers I didn't know. For example, Daniel Lusk and Angela Patton and a couple of more. So she introduced me to those people and some of the Burlington scene. Ben
Aylshire.
Oh, the Salon.
Yeah, with the Salon.
Right. Publisher of Salon, right.
So I had a little help from my friends, I'd say. But we're now looking this fall on our calendar thus far. We have Eric Rickstadt teaching a year-long workshop on write your book, fiction. And it meets once a month, every 4 or 5 weeks. And from start to finish, he will help you start or revise or finish a work of fiction.
Mm-hmm.
We have Elizabeth Blumley doing her children's picture book workshop again. We have Daniel's fourth round of writing poetry classes. And I am still searching for, I would like someone to teach what I'd hoped Angela could do, but her schedule was too full, which is creative nonfiction and or memoir.
Oh, okay.
So we hope to have those and then many one evening and one day events as well on specific topics.
Okay.
We'll have all of that posted, I hope, in the next couple of weeks.
And when do those classes begin?
September. Most of them begin about by September 15th. Everything rolls out.
And Daniel, your class is going to meet how often?
It meets once a week, but it meets for 5 weeks.
Okay.
In a series, and then that way people can join after 5 weeks and begin. We sort of begin again, but sometimes with the same people.
Oh, all right.
Or many of the same people.
Because you're working on things that you can learn more and more and more about as you go. I mean, poetry isn't something you learn in 5 weeks.
Right. And many of the people have been writing for years, the people in the workshop.
Yeah.
And just feel like they still need guidance, and that's what I call it, is guided practice.
I love the title of your poetry class.
Oh, it's named for a book by the former poet laureate of the United States, Ted Kooser.
Uh-huh.
It's called Delights and Shadows.
Oh, wonderful. I love Ted Kooser's poetry. Yeah.
Marvelous poem.
Is he a role model for you in any way? Or
he has been.
Yeah.
Yeah, for much of my career he's been. And we're both from... He was born in Iowa, as I was, and lived most of his life in the Midwest, and so, or maybe all of his life, and I didn't. I came here.
You know. Now, Delights and Shadows. So in the context of your class, what does that refer to?
Well, it refers to sort of the joy and sorrows that humans experience, and finding unique ways, unique voices for themselves, for ourselves. To express those things that we want to do, but with, as Lynn has said, with some craft.
Right.
And so that's what I'm basically teaching mostly is craft.
Okay. All right. So what upcoming events or projects are on the horizon?
The four classes I mentioned, and we would like to start two things that we began and didn't quite build a core group yet. We'd like to have a writer's circle for people who want to meet, say, once a week to write with or without prompts and get things rolling, because we're hoping not only to teach craft, but we're hoping to create community.
Mm-hmm.
And we also were looking at a writer's salon where perhaps we'll have some guests in. We had... actually, the salon people, Ben and Robbie McKay, do a poetry reading. Daniel and Angela did. We've had Barry Dunsmore during the political races give talks. So we hope to build on the salon idea.
Wonderful.
And find different ways to celebrate both the written and the spoken word. And if I had a dream come true, I'll put it out there in case anyone hears this and can help. I would love to build storytelling in the manner of Moth Radio or Snap Judgment, where people can learn to tell their stories out loud quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to celebrate both written and spoken word.
Mm-hmm. So now, how do people get in touch if they want to teach, if they want to take classes, if they want to just talk to you about what's going on?
Email is lovely, and that would be Lynn, L-I-N, at windridgebooksofvt.com. Phone numbers, 985-3091.
Okay. And then, is there a website where people can read about the offerings?
There is, and you can like us on Facebook. So we have a website for Windridge Books of Vermont. We have one, and on that website is the Writer's Barn.
Okay.
On one drop down. We're also on Facebook, so you can follow us and like us on Facebook, and you'll be able to see what we're doing in all three places, in the Writer's Barn, Windridge Books, or What's New at Red Barn.
Okay. Now, Windridge Books, when they take submissions, is there a certain calendar, certain part of the calendar year when they do accept submissions, or is that a year-round?
We look at them year-round. This year we published all four books in the fall. Usually we do two in the spring mm-hmm. and two in the fall, mm-hmm. and I am looking forward to going back to two at a time, and we might add even two more, mm-hmm. But spring and fall releases.
Okay, wonderful. Can you talk a little bit about the space where events happen and workshops happen?
Oh, well, we renovated a cute little Red Barn right next to our larger publishing house in Shelburne Village. And we have the whole downstairs, and it's a living room with bright open windows and a mini kitchen in the back for food and drink and air conditioning and heat. We've had many funny phone calls from people who wanted to know they might have dust allergies or worried about tripping into the barn, and so I want to reassure you, it's fully renovated. There's really a floor and a fully functioning heating system in place.
Excellent. That's good.
And it doesn't have an outhouse.
No, that's right. Indoor plumbing, indoor even plumbing. Better.
Oh, that's pretty funny. Now, Lynn, do you write?
I read and write for a living. So at the moment, I don't do anything private or personal.
Uh-huh. So when you say you write for a living, as an editor? Or?
As an editor, I read, and then I write for one of our sister companies.
Okay.
Publications, Ad Lib, you know, for Destination Vermont Magazine is okay. The one most frequently. But also if there's a newspaper story and I'm the right person. So I'm a little busy right now for personal writing, but I do write for work.
Okay. And if you were to have time freed up, would you be writing poetry or fiction or nonfiction? What do you think that would look like?
I imagine it would be two things, which is creative nonfiction and poetry.
Okay.
But at the moment, I'm pretty immersed in certain ideas for a bit of creative nonfiction.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you both very much for speaking with me today.
Thank you.
You're
welcome.
I
was thrilled to be invited.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Lynn Stone and Daniel Lusk. More information about the Writer's Barn can be found at windridgebooksofvt.com. So there you go, some great new writing communities in the Burlington area. I hope you enjoyed hearing about those. I will put their websites on Write the Books podcast site. Write the Book and The Radiator are supported in part by Burlington Telecom, providing Burlington with access to the world. Internet, television, telephone, burlingtontelecom.com, Burlington's fiber optic gigabit network. We ran out of time for the Bookworm's calendar and the writing prompt during the show this week, but I am going to put a writing prompt on the podcast site, and both of those features will be back next week. If you're interested in sharing this show with out-of-town friends, let them know they can stream it live at theradiator.org every Monday from 2 to 3. Archived episodes of Write the Book are also available on iTunes and at writethebook.podbean.com as free podcasts. You can visit Write the Book on Twitter and Write the Book Radio Show on Facebook for updates. If you have a guest to suggest or comments about the show or news about book-related events, please send an email to writethebook@gmail.com. Please remember that this station is here thanks to community support and involvement. More information about The Radiator is available online at theradiator.org. This has been Write the Book. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMM LP, Burlington, Vermont.